As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and we are back with everyone's favourite podcast odd couple. It's George Corgan and Chris Woff. How the devil are you, George Corgan? Are you alright?
I'm very well, yeah. Sort of on that subject, that just brings to mind my opening conversation that I had with Jacob at the match at the weekend. He'd gone to Armstrong Bridge to the Saturday market on Saturday before the game, and he said he was just walking along minding his own business, looking at the stalls, and then suddenly he's kind of like looking down and he just sees someone carrying this massive sausage on a stick, and he was like thinking to himself, that's quite weird, isn't it? I mean, it's like a sausage on a stick. I mean, effectively a sausage is a meat stick, isn't it? It is a stick of meat. Why would you need to put a stick onto a sausage? And I wonder what kind of person would actually buy a sausage on a stick. And then, of course, he hears, hello, Jacob. And it's Chris.
Perfect way to start a Saturday, that's all I'm saying.
I was in my element. How about that,
It turned out I was also wearing an athletic hoodie at the time, which I didn't realise. So I was very much representing both my cliche on the podcast and in general just what I do from day to day. So yeah. That's me selling the company to everyone by walking along Armstrong Bridge with a sausage on a stick.
I saw the photo and it is the most on-brand photo of Chris Woff that's ever been taken, isn't it? Fabulous.
This makes me giggle, that thought, that image.
Apart from sausages on sticks, Chris, have you had a canny weekend?
Yes, it was nice, thank you. I was at the game on Saturday in George's seat, so yeah, everyone around there prefers me being there, I think, to George, but you know, that's just understandable. So yeah, I've struck up a bit of camaraderie, I think, with the people around me. So, or they just pity me. One of the two, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come on to you and the idea of camaraderie and ideas and thoughts and stuff that you say.
How about you, Taylor? You've got a bit of a cold, haven't you? You've got a bit of a...
I'm a little bit snuffly. I'm a little bit bunged up, Chris, but you know...
You're powering through.
It's nothing I can't get through. I don't like to make a fuss, Chris. You know me. I don't like to make a fuss when things like this happen. So I just power through, get my head down, you know, and crack on very much. Like Newcastle United did on Saturday. Do you like that link? That was very professional, wasn't it?
Beautiful.
4-0 against Crystal Palace. I'd say this was as routine a win as you can get, isn't it? Even after that Burnley one, which we said was a routine win. They basically never got out of first gear and still managed to stick four goals past Crystal Palace. The opening few minutes, opening goal, Fabian Schär, Kieran Trippier, Jacob Murphy, happy days, Varchek. 1-0, George. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, I was a bit irritated with that VAR check. It was, I don't know, it felt like that was one that actually sucked the life out of the first bit of the celebration.
Kind of stole the moment, didn't it?
It did. It wasn't quite the same, I didn't think, as the Dan Burn one against PSG, where the sort of celebration had happened and then sort of faded away. This was kind of irritating. But
well, the players knew from the bench, didn't they? The bench had basically told, and Anthony Gordon was part of
the centre, so
they were telling them, yeah.
But anyway, yeah, absolutely brilliant start, and beautiful ball across from Fabian Schär, and then Trippier, who was brilliant. We'll come on to talk about the way Newcastle attacked down that side. But yeah, it was just a great way to start the game. And Palace just did not recover, could not recover.
I mean, it's a pretty obvious that Jacob Murphy didn't mean that, Chris. Are you going to contradict that and suggest that he maybe did?
Well, he himself said he didn't mean it, so I'm not going to be contrary for once.
He literally couldn't have kicked that ball any other way for it to go in, could he? It kind of hit the very tip of his toe, and the way it spun and the way it looped, there was no other way that was going in the net.
No, and I mean, almost you felt that really aided Newcastle in terms of the first, obviously 3-0 last season, as we mentioned. Newcastle didn't get that slice of luck, and they were very. It's a very fortuitous first goal to get. I mean, the move leading up to it's very good, but the fact that he manages to mishit his cross so that it goes in the far corner.
Yeah.
But that's exactly what they needed. And as George said, Palace never recovered, and I know it took until the 43rd minute for Newcastle to score the second, but you knew that if Newcastle scored a second, that was game over, because Palace had come to sit back and hopefully contain Newcastle and maybe catch them on the break at some stage. There was no chance they were scoring twice, and I mean, as it turned out, there was no chance of even scoring once, but yeah, that just set Newcastle off. I think it eased everyone, if there were any nerves in the ground that and amongst the players, that just eased everything, and from then on you really felt they were going to win.
Absolutely. I would literally had just got to my seat when that goal went in, and I was in the very back row of level 7, and it was like watching the match on Football Manager. It was absolutely ridiculous back there, but the whole place went bananas, George, and Palace won the toss, didn't they? And they decided to shoot uphill in the first half, 43 minutes in, leading by just one solitary goal. Newcastle United are in real trouble.
No, of course not. It did feel like one of those games where Newcastle, you sort of wanted them to get that second goal, and you know, when they did, as Chris says, that was game over. But what you're getting at here is the theory that Chris explained on the podcast after the Man City game in the League Cup, and he said,
"Well, I've been sort of waiting for the moment to bring this up, and it's, I mean, this is me trying to think about football and actually
what have we told you?
Exactly. Yeah.
So he's got too much time on his hands. He's got too much time on his hands, hasn't he, Tom?
This is a concern for all of us. But I suggest that Newcastle United should break with tradition, and I have a theory that Eddie Howe's Newcastle United should start, if they win the toss, by playing towards the Gallagher end. And when we talk about the change of pace in the first half to the second half, I think that when you have a side who want to come out the traps very quickly, press the opposition and in suffocation almost, that actually going down the slope first half would be to Newcastle's benefit in terms of preventing the opposition from getting out. Now, the argument would be Newcastle turned it around last night in second half. That's when they put the afterburners on. But that I've just got this, I just feel that maybe that the way that this side is programmed, that actually there would be better first half to be shooting towards the Gallagher end, breaking with tradition that Newcastle would do, have done for so many years, that if they win the toss, they shoot towards the Leeds end the first half. I think that they should change that and see how it works.
And so on Saturday, all I was getting, all we were getting in our little group chat, was this constant stream of Chris saying how right he was and how much he wanted official apologies from us on the show, because of course we roundly and correctly ridiculed Chris for attempting to break with Newcastle United tradition. So let's go to Chris. Let's just get this out of the way, and let's see if Chris does want to gloat. Let's see what Chris's thoughts are about this.
I mean, at the risk of making this all about me, and my name is not George Culkin, so I'm not keen to do that, but at the risk of making this all about me, I want to say that, because I know what you're going to come back with. It's going to be second half. Newcastle, you know, they didn't do as much. They didn't seem to have as much energy. But the game was over by half time. Newcastle were 3-0 up. Palace could not get out during the first half. Newcastle should have been 5 or 6-0 up. Now, that doesn't necessarily prove that my theory is right. All it does show is that if Eddie Howe's Newcastle United attack down the hill, it's very, very difficult in that first half when they have all the energy and the intensity to attack out. What it allowed them to do during the second half was play in second gear and take off all the big players early so that they can be ready for Wednesday night. Now, I'm not saying that they should change categorically. I'm just saying it was interesting to see, and I think that at least part of it worked. Although, to counter my own point, is after Newcastle scored the opening goal, there was about 10-15 minutes where they weren't at the very best, and it took another 10-15 minutes for them to get into the game. But still, yes.
Okay, thank you, Chris. So what is it that you would like from us exactly? What would you like?
I would like you to at least accept that even if you disagree with the point that Newcastle should break with tradition, that rather than just dismiss an idea that I come up with immediately as absolutely ridiculous,
yeah,
wait until it comes out in practice. And it wasn't the most ridiculous idea in the world. It was a theory of there is at least a prognosis behind it. It may not work, and longer term it may not prove to be the answer. But I do not want it to be dismissed as instantly and ridiculed in exactly the way that it was when I bring it up.
Okay, you've made your point very eloquently, and I fully take it on board. I have a couple of points to give you in response. The first is, quite simply, Newcastle could have kicked off vertically in that match, and they would still have beaten Crystal Palace.
You've got no way of proving that. You've got absolutely no way of proving that.
Secondly, never back down, never give in, never surrender, never apologise, never, ever, bloody anything ever, never give Chris Woff an inch, because he will take a mile. And Chris, I've actually done my research on this. I've done a lot of research.
I struggle to believe
this. No, I haven't slept a lot in the last 24 hours because I knew this was coming and I knew I had to have a good response to this. So I've actually looked back at the stats over the last 30 years, and it's, as I say, it's taken me a long time. Would you like to hear the result?
No. Because the stats of the last 30 years are irrelevant.
Because
Eddie Howe's Newcastle United.
Yeah, okay. Because I have found conclusively, definitively, that on 63% of the times that you open your mouth, absolute effluent spews out of it. So that's definitive. The big picture, though, here, Chris, right? Your theory is based on Newcastle breaking with tradition and deciding to kick off towards the Gallagher end when they win the toss. Newcastle lost the toss on Saturday.
Yeah.
They did not choose to kick towards the Gallagher end. So therefore, everything that follows beyond that is an absolute irrelevance.
Why is it
they relevant? Didn't break with tradition. If they had won the toss, they would have stayed with their own tradition,
yeah,
and kicked towards the Leasers' end. So this is not some vindication.
It is, because it's showing Newcastle... it's showing them if they do elect to do it, they can play that way. We're going to go around in circles here.
I fear we're going to get bogged down here, chaps.
But nobody is suggesting that Newcastle United have never won games of football when kicking towards the Gallagher end in the first half. Nobody is suggesting that. What we are suggesting is that is a ridiculous theory. Anyway, one more thing. I felt like I needed some serious heavyweight backup to this point. So I texted Alan from work this morning, a.k.a. the Lion of Gosforth, a.k.a. The greatest goal scorer in Newcastle United's history, former England captain, former Newcastle United captain, Newcastle United number 9. So here we go. So this is the full verbatim transcript, which I will put into our group chat as proof. Morning. All okay? Am I right in saying that when you won the toss as Newcastle United captain, you would always choose to kick down the hill at St James's Park in the second half? And he replies, capital letters, always. Second text. Capital letters again. He does this a lot. It's a bit like how he just speaks in real life. Shoot towards the Gallagher end. And I said, ha ha, thank you. And was that simply about tiredness? I.e. it's easier on everyone's legs and harder on the opposition. And he said, I or we always thought it was easier, better to go down the hill second half. I then go back and say to him, this is something that Chris suggested on the podcast a few weeks ago, suggesting that Newcastle should choose to kick downhill in the first half and use that as an excuse to blow teams away. My theory, however, is that Chris is an idiot. Alan Shearer's response, you are correct. Case closed. Let's move on.
Well then, yeah, let's move on.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Newcastle 1-0 up. Luckily, Fabian Scher and Jacob Murphy with key contributions again as Anthony Gordon added a second. My favourite part of any Newcastle game is the moment when Fabian Scher decides to just fuck off on a little adventure with the ball and do whatever the frig he likes for 5 minutes or so. And he did that a couple of times in the game, but we also have to say as well his passing and his general distribution from the back was just absolutely beautiful. He clips the ball forward and Newcastle end up with a second goal through Anthony Gordon. Great for him as he just missed the chance a couple of minutes earlier, George, as well, hadn't he?
Yeah, that chance which he skied from very close range. Yeah, Scher on the ball is brilliant. I mean, it takes you back to the kind of Benitez era and the times that Scher played, and he left out Jonjo Shelvey, who Jonjo Shelvey obviously had that kind of incredible array of passing, but Scher has it as well. And when he's given that freedom to do that, it's just beautiful that those crossfield diagonal passes. Again, we have to give credit to both him and Jamal Lascelles. You know, two of brilliant. Of our old era defenders playing absolutely brilliantly. Scher not in his accustomed role. They can hardly have had an easier game than they did against Palace. But yeah, just wanted to shout out to them.
Yeah, I mean, on that point about Scher and Lascelles, what was interesting, and although Scher, we've become accustomed to playing very, very well in the right-sided centre-back position, what was interesting in the game on Saturday was he was the left-sided centre-back, but because Trippier was essentially playing as a wing-back, if not a right-winger, he became a back three when Newcastle had the ball with Byrne, and Scher was basically in the middle of the pitch, which meant he had the entire pitch of both sides to be able to play the passes, and you could just see that vision and the ability to actually carry it out. In the first 15 minutes, he just kept on playing that lovely dinked diagonal across to Kieran Trippier.
Yeah.
And as good as Newcastle's right-hand side was, Scher passing the ball to Trippier and then Murphy and Longstaff running beyond were excellent. Palace's inability to deal with that, it was as if it surprised them that's where Newcastle were going to be strong on the right-hand side. Mitchell was terrible, but I felt for him because he had no support. He played odds on Edward, Roy Hodgson on the left-hand side, who just did not track at all. He gave absolutely no support, and he didn't switch it until half-time, by which stage the game was done. He moved down Jordan Ayew across the other side, and it was just baffling that he would approach that. But what Newcastle did was they identified that weakness, and they just kept going for it and going for it and going for it. And as I said earlier, they could and should have been far more than 3-0 up at half-time. If you ever see a game where the stats belie, as in the core stats belie the reality of it, is this match from Saturday. Newcastle only had 10 shots to Palace's 17, which just seems ridiculous when you actually take the bounce of it. No, it doesn't make any sense. But Newcastle had so many times in the first half where they got down the right and Murphy, Longstaff or Trippier would get the ball into the box and either the final touch wasn't there or Palace just managed to scramble it away. And they were just thoroughly, thoroughly dominant. And the link of play between them was just sensational down that side.
Sean Longstaff as well, bursting forward, capitalised on a defensive lapse. Margee slipping over there. Maybe it was because he was playing uphill, Chris. I don't know, maybe. And we were rampant down that right-hand side, weren't we? George Trippier, Murphy, Anthony Gordon coming across a few times as well. Sean Longstaff bursting into the box. Just brilliant stuff.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm quite surprised that Roy Hodgson didn't try and shore that side up a bit more than they did. Because we talked before about Gordon scoring the goal. He's been Newcastle's sort of most important, most influential attacker in recent weeks, arguably this season. He wasn't needed. I mean, he wasn't needed in that first half, really, apart from the goal, because everything was going down that right side. Those beautiful little triangle passes, creating space. Trippier would have space to cross. Longstaff coming across there. Murphy too. It was just absolutely overloaded on that side. Brilliant to see Sean score again. And yeah, I mean, just reacted so quickly to that mistake, but incredible on that side.
After the match, a former Newcastle United player who shall remain nameless called me, and his verdict on the Marquee situation for Sean Longstaff's goal was that you get so many centre-backs now who think they're players, and he tries to take it down and play it, and Sean Longstaff just sat him on his arse, was exactly what he said. And he did, and
that was clearly John Anderson, wasn't it, Chris? I don't know why you're hiding that. I mean, you haven't hidden his identity very well there
at
all.
No, well, it was John Anderson, yes. So... But it was, but you could see almost when Longstaff breaks it in the box with the ball. There's almost that sort of, you could feel it in the crowd. Where everyone was like, "Is play still alive here? Is this game going on?"
Yeah.
And then he just has the complete composure just to pass it beyond him. But there was sort of that moment elapsed where it just felt like the game must have stopped because it was just such a weird, unusual moment. But that, I mean, that Palace were completely done. I think they were done by the second goal, but that just meant that the second half was to a degree a complete non-event.
Longstaff had so much space; he could have bent down and retied his shoelaces, couldn't he? And finished his carton of Ribena and then slotted the ball in the corner. He had the freedom of the box. We struggled uphill in the second half, didn't we? Let's be honest.
We've moved on.
We were burning energy. We've been here already, I know. It's clearly the worst direction to be playing in the game. We've already established that. But we did manage a fourth. Less than 10 seconds for the ball to travel from Nick Pope to the Palace net via Trippier, Murphy and the goal scorer, Callum Wilson. That right-hand side again. Five touches, box to box, ball in the net, George.
Yeah, brilliant. And just at that moment, Newcastle's subs were warming up. There was a very funny moment when Wilson kind of comes off and Isak comes on and they had a nice little sort of embrace. And it looked like sort of Wilson was saying, I got my goal, it's your turn now. But yeah, very pleased for him to score. I think they just, from that point, I mean, it was absolute training match situation. A load of substitutes, took players off, rested them. Really good to be able to do that. And, you know, all the team tried to do from that point was keep the score as it was. And Palace were blown away, but they were hopeless. They were really hopeless.
There were, and that goal sort of summed up the difference between the two sides, is that Decore has the sort of curled shot which Pope saves, and then Palace just don't react. They don't try to get back into shape. They don't retreat.
No.
Nick Pope has the ball, looks up, and there's space for him to give the ball to Trippier, who then plays it first time to Murphy, who, the way that he plays that ball across the box, and actually I was speaking to my brother after the game on Saturday, and he made it sort of interesting point about Jacob Murphy, that it seems to be, if something positive happens to Jacob Murphy in the first 5-10 minutes of a match, then for the rest of that match, he can be an absolute world beater, like he was against Spurs, like he was on Saturday. He just seems to, you can see him visibly growing confidence, and the pass for the second, the assist for the second goal was wonderful, but the assist for that one, it was just perfectly timed, because when I was sitting, I'm towards the sort of right hand side of the Millburn side, when I first saw it, they pays the ball across, I was thinking, why hasn't the keeper come here to try and intercept Wilson? But when you see it again, you can't, it's in that sort of perfect, the way that it sort of curls around, the keeper can't come. And then again, Wilson has the time to take a touch and put it beyond him. And yeah, Callum Wilson would have been a very angry man, I think, if he'd come out off without scoring in that match, because he had that header in the first half. He didn't have loads of clear-cut opportunities, but Newcastle had created so many and in the end won 4-0, and Wilson would have been furious if he'd not left the pitch with a goal.
I was going to say, one of my favourite things in the entire game was just after the fourth goal went in, Eddie Howe did the universally recognised symbol for just calm things down a little bit, lads. And then he put Miguel Almiron on, who proceeded to run around like a complete madman for 10 minutes and nearly got a goal as well himself. Imagine telling Miguel Almiron to just take it easy and chill out for a bit when he sends him on the pitch. Absolute nonsense, George.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, you know, people want to be involved and they want to make an impact. The thing I was going to mention about Murphy was that there was a moment when Palace broke and he was the one getting back to defend and to make a clearance, and yeah, just absolutely brilliant. He does in lots of ways. He embodies the team, and it's brilliant to see him integral.
On Murphy as well, I mean, that was probably the one surprise selection from the 11. If you picked the 11 before, and I think a lot of people expected Miguel Almiron to start. In hindsight, he'd come back late for having been involved for Paraguay, so it made sense. But again, it shows when Newcastle have these international breaks and they are preparing for a very specific match, you could see exactly what Jacob Murphy had been asked to do and what Newcastle had worked on that right-hand side.
Yeah.
And that's where the attention to detail comes into it, but also Murphy's willingness to just do exactly what he's taught. You can see he buys into everything. He enjoys himself out on the pitch.
Yeah.
He does get shouted out by his teammates from time to time. There's a few times where Wilson was basically screaming at him that he should be in a certain different position. Trippier shouts at him and keeps him in position, but he just loves being involved in this team, and that is, he has elevated himself beyond what I think any of us comprehended that he could. We've spoken about so many turnarounds in players, but for Jacob Murphy, who hadn't started a Premier League match yet this season, to come in and deliver a performance like that,
it's fabulous,
just says everything about the level that this squad is on and how everyone is pushing each other to new limits.
My missus texted me during the game and just said, we must protect Jacob Murphy at all costs, and I completely agree. Let's not get carried away, though. This was a pretty depleted Palace side, but maybe we can get a little bit carried away. Newcastle United, for the league rankings, currently first in terms of goals scored, first in terms of expected goals, first for shots on target inside the box, first for shot conversion rate, and first for big chances scored. They're leading the way in all of the stats that matter, George. They're doing the job they need to do, and they're flying up the league now, and it's great to see.
Yeah, 5 wins in a row at home as well, I think I'm right in saying, Chris. Is that right?
Yep.
And showing sort of all aspects of the game at the minute. Professional, clinical, I think that's what those stats show, Taylor, that you've just mentioned, that expected goals top, but also goals top. So that shows that they're creating chances, taking chances, which is just really good to see.
Fabulous stuff. And the reaction post-match from the crowd for Sandro Tonali, Chris, it's an interesting one, this, isn't it, for Sandro? It's obviously been a very emotional week for him. I think Eddie Howe probably used him quite wisely in just giving him that little 20-minute cameo.
Well, I mean, it wasn't just the post-match reaction. There was obviously the Forza Tonali...
During the match, there was the
very minimalist Forza Tonali banner before the game from War Flags. Only that and the show race and the races and the red card one in the corner to quite clearly send a message of support when he went out to warm up in the 20-odd minute, the entire ground just about was up applauding, and then he got a wonderful reception coming onto the pitch even before he was on, when the four substitutes were standing there. Lane, I mean, that's also taking the piss a little bit to be able to bring on four substitutes, but that's a slightly separate matter. But the everyone was up on their feet, and yes, after the game, Eddie Howe said himself that he was the one who sort of pushed Sandro Tonali towards the Gallagher end where he received that reception. I mean, George wrote about this, and obviously we are unsure if he will be in a black and white shirt again in the near future. But as a potential send off that was, I think that will have meant a heck of a lot to him.
I just think it was an incredible day, really, in those terms, in those sort of emotive terms. You take a step back. Obviously, he is going to suffer from any ban that's coming his way, but Newcastle suffer. His teammates will suffer. The crowd will suffer. You know, this is a fella that the team and club have spent a lot of money on, and he won't be available. We're pretty sure about that. And for the response to be the way it was, I just think was absolutely incredible. It was very emotional at the end. Eddie Howe said in his post-match press conference that he decided to do that little thing where Tonali walked first towards the Gallagher end and then stood almost on his own in front of the Gallagher end with his teammates and coaching staff just hanging back. And there was a sort of clear message there that he is absolutely part of us, but in that moment he was getting that ovation on his own, not for anything he'd done in the game, but because of the situation he faces. And you know, it takes me back to that, to the AC Milan game where he spoke beforehand, the away match, and he said that he felt a little bit lost in his early weeks at Newcastle. And, you know, he's still getting to know his new teammates. He's still getting to understand the club. There's a lot about his future which is opaque at the moment and how he'll deal with it and how he'll cope. But the one thing he knows beyond any doubt at all is that Newcastle fans, his teammates, have his back. And it was just an absolutely beautiful, beautiful moment. Sad in its own way, but really, really precious, I thought. And yeah, I asked the head coach about that afterwards. He talked on Friday about hoping that the crowd would throw their arms around Sandro, and boy, did they do that.
Well, just a big thank you from me to our supporters today, because that reaction, reception at the end was incredible, and it was emotional. As I said on Friday, he's a human being. He's going through a very emotional time, and the supporters reacted in the way that I hoped they would, and I could feel the love between him and them, and that will do him the world of good. He'll feel much better about everything, I'm sure, tonight. We don't know what's ahead for him, but yeah, just a big thank you from me to them. Yeah, he's very much wanted to play and to perform, I'm sure. I mean, I haven't really gone into detail on that. For me, that's a no. There was no decision to make as in would I or could I play him. It's like, yes, I can see that from how he's trained. So there's no part of me that goes, oh, he's not ready to play football. But then we have to just introduce him at the right time and make sure it's right for the team. It was a good time to do it today. I thought he played well when he came on. But I just think hopefully that is a step further or a step forward for him to moving forward with his life.
Yeah, Chris, it looks like we'll learn a little bit more about Tonali's punishment in the next day or two, doesn't it? Hopefully we'll get some sort of word about that.
Yeah, I mean, by the time this podcast is out, we may have even heard something, or at least we are. Yeah. I know that certainly from Tonali's point of view, I think they're keen to get it, any punishment which is handed down almost immediately, so that he can basically start serving this suspension. Basically said when he was asked more than 30 times, I think, about Tonali at the pre-match press conference on Friday, and then subsequently after the match on Saturday, I don't think there is any shying away from Newcastle that they very much expect a significant ban. I don't think we're going to see him for the rest of this season, could well be into parts of next season. And then once they actually know the extent of that, then in terms of primarily for Tonali himself and his family, they can start plotting a way forward, how he gets through this and then comes back, but also for Newcastle United themselves to work out exactly what it is in terms of timescale that they're going to be without their huge summer signing, the one who they spent all of the money on, as we've already mentioned. January window, a lot of people are already asking about that. Ideally, Newcastle really wanted another midfielder even in the summer. That was the plan going into the summer. And the fact that they now are not going to have Sandro Tonali, very much the sounding seemed to be that that is something that they will look at. But once they actually have the clarity on the way forward, I think that's just the best for everyone now. That they've accepted the situation, everyone involved. But it's now just to know exactly what the extent of that is.
Okay, I think it's time to move on, chaps. We have to say well done to Becky Langley and all the lasses. Another win on the road at Huddersfield this time. And they're reeling in Burnley at the top of the FAWNL Northern Premier. Charlotte Potts opened the scoring and was delighted with Sunday's result. She took to Twitter and said, "Clean sheet, a performance that proved how hard we've been working, and a lovely little bonus getting on the score sheet today. Looking forward to continuing to build with this team." Heart eye emoji, black heart, white heart. Lovely stuff. George, not a bad result for the lasses, eh?
Brilliant, yeah, still unbeaten. And, yeah, really starting to now put the pressure on at the top of the league. I mean, things aren't necessarily going Newcastle's way in lots of ways. It's been a very stop-start season for them in terms of games being postponed and all that. And this one was no exception. They had to wait 15 minutes at the start of the match whilst the replacement official turns up. Huddersfield had a player sent off after a couple of minutes, so that certainly will have helped them, but you know, they then missed another penalty. But you have to then take advantage of those situations, and they did it with great aplomb. So, yeah, well done to them. Brilliant result, and yeah, fantastic for both teams, wasn't it?
So, a good weekend to be a Magpie indeed. The men's first 11 win 4-0. The women's team won 4-0. The women's development team won 7-2. The under-21s won 5-0 in the Northumberland Cup. And I'm no maths genius, but that's an aggregate of 20 goals to 2. A great weekend for the Mags on the pitch, and that will have delighted everyone who works at the club. George, you spoke to a member of the training ground staff about something special that they are doing at the moment.
Yeah, it's really nice. I want to give a big, big shout out to, there are 17 members of training ground staff who are running, they've kept this quiet, by the way, running a minimum of 5 kilometres a day in October for Prostate Cancer UK. Absolutely brilliant cause. And it's just a great thing for them to do. I think by the sound of it, it's been tough getting out, you know, when they've got loads of games, getting out when it's been appalling weather and storms, and some people have had babies, for instance, at that time. But apparently it's been really good for their sort of morale too. I'd particularly like to single out Ryan Parrish and Lee Marshall, two colleagues that Chris and I work with a lot, and just say well done to them, to send them loads and loads of love. People can go onto Just Giving if they search justgiving.com/team/Newcastle United and sponsor them. It's an absolutely brilliant cause, and we'll put that link into our show notes as well. So well done, and keep it up. Not too long to go now.
Absolutely great stuff, guys. Remember, we are at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X if you want to get in touch. We're all on there individually as well, but pretty easy to find. Or give us an email at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about that Dortmund game in the Champions League.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So Wednesday night sees the 1997 UEFA Champions League winners Borussia Dortmund come to St James's Park for a night of fun and frolics. Rumours of Dortmund's demise have been greatly exaggerated though, George, haven't they? 8 games into the Bundesliga season and they remain unbeaten and they've won 5 on the bounce.
Yes, they're fourth in the table. They're a couple of points off top. I mean, it doesn't feel like this is a vintage Dortmund team, having gone so close in the league last season. It's just really exciting though, isn't it? I mean, it's like, can't wait. We've been sort of dissecting what happened at the weekend. It's, yeah, God, it's, if it's anything like PSG in terms of atmosphere, in terms of occasion, it's just going to be very, 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 very special indeed. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, I think every single thing that I do this week leading up, there's just going to be that little flash in the back of my brain going, Dortmund, 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 yeah. Think about Dortmund. Just constantly. Just a point for them so far, Chris, in our Champions League group. 0-0 at home to Milan, followed by a defeat at the Parc des Princes. They haven't had the best time in Europe yet, have they?
No, I mean, basically the cliche, because it's true in to Champions League, is that you need to win your home games, and the fact that they didn't beat Milan has put a lot of pressure onto them, the bottom of the group. If Newcastle were to win this, then Dortmund suddenly become in a very, very difficult situation. They need at least a point really from this. I said before we came on air, and George sort of ridiculed me, but I am reluctant to say it because I'm not very usually optimistic, but I am very confident that Newcastle can and will win this game. I would be shocked if they didn't, because even if they reach half of the level in terms of intensity from both the crowd and the players on the pitch that they did against Paris Saint-Germain, I just can't see how Dortmund cope with them. I certainly can't see Dortmund coming there and winning. It just feels like a special place at the moment to play football, particularly on those Champions League nights. Eddie Howe and the players will certainly not be being complacent about this. I'm not trying to be complacent. I just think the way that Newcastle swatted aside Palace so easily and then have been able to rest some of the big players for this one, the focus they have, they can put themselves very, very close to nearly qualifying, really, if they win on Wednesday, and I do expect them to win.
Yeah, this isn't a kind of specific point, but I just wanted to clarify that my pre-show ridiculing was then immediately followed by during show ridiculing, and there will be a lot of post-match ridiculing as well. That is very much a way of life for me, and not specifically about what Newcastle do against Dortmund. I'm confident. I'm not going to say I'd be surprised if they don't win, because I don't want to sort of have that feeling ahead of a game like this, but yeah, can't wait for it. You know, there's nothing to be scared of.
There isn't anything to be scared of, is there? But Hummels, Schüle, Brand, Royce, they're all proper players, aren't they? All proper international Champions League experienced players, George.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned those players. They kind of roll off the tongue, don't they? Again, looking forward to seeing them at St James's Park, in the sense that I was looking forward to seeing Mbappe at St James's Park. I hoped I didn't want to see him play well. I wanted to see him have a stinker and lose. I mean, the same with these players. I want to see players come to St James's be absolutely taken aback by the atmosphere and the way that Newcastle pile into them. And same with them. One kind of interesting little side plot in this match, of course, is Alexander Isak, who didn't start at the weekend, who missed Sweden's matches in the international break. You would sort of therefore expect him to start this match, as has often been the case in the Champions League. And he had a couple of years at Dortmund. They weren't the happiest years of his career, certainly not in terms of appearances and goals. So, yeah, I wonder if he'll have a bit of extra motivation to do well in that match too.
Absolutely. And as you said, Chris, we can pretty much end Dortmund's hopes of qualification, can't we? And 3 points will put us on the brink of the knockouts. Group of death? What group of death?
Well, I mean, it was said before the last match by Luis Enrique that Newcastle were the team from pot four that nobody wanted, and I think at least in the first two matches that's proven to be the case. The fact that Newcastle have come out with 4 points from them, even if in Milan they were perhaps fortunate at half time to still be level. They absolutely blew Paris Saint-Germain away. Dortmund, it's going to be very, very difficult, as I said before, if they don't at least get a point from this to even think about qualifying from this, whereas Newcastle can put themselves in a very, very strong position. Your whole matches are what you need to win. 9-10 points basically nearly guarantees you going through in most years. And so Newcastle are already on 4. If they get a point or 3 on Thursday, that they're very, very close. Probably on Wednesday, they're very, very close to getting there. We haven't mentioned yet that they will do it still without Sven Botman, who Eddie Howe said after the match is going to be probably another week or two away from being available for Newcastle. The defence has performed extremely well in recent weeks, but the fact that they can't change that is perhaps a little bit of a concern in terms of they don't have the depth there. If Sandro Tonali is not available come Wednesday as well, or certainly the games beyond, that's one fewer player Newcastle have in the Champions League squad. We mentioned a few weeks ago how the Champions League squad is different to the Premier League squad. They could only register, I think it was 23 players in the end, and so they don't have the likes of Matt Ritchie and a few others in that squad. So although he's not a midfielder, that would be another body who Newcastle do not have available there. So they are getting a little bit stretched in some departments, but equally the way that they're playing at the moment, there's so much positivity going into Wednesday, and hopefully they can just carry that momentum through. I exchanged a few messages with people inside the dressing room after the game on Saturday, and that was the very much the message throughout the international break, was they've got momentum, let's keep momentum. That was what they were talking about internally, and they certainly did that on Saturday, so fingers crossed going into Wednesday as well.
Sorry, George, I thought you were going to pop in with something there.
Absolutely not.
Okay, no worries. So then, all eyes towards Dortmund on Wednesday. Have you chaps got anything interesting in the pipeline, George? Anything coming up?
Well, I mean, Chris obviously hasn't, because he's having a six-month sabbatical, as we know. But he does have a return to work coming up in the pipeline. So we're entering the sort of last week of...
It's going to be a shock to the system, isn't it?
Chris's laziness, yeah. We're going to Man United away together in the League Cup, so that's going to be a tense car journey. I've got a lot of frustration to get out. We're writing about the match. Jacob's got a piece coming out, I think, tomorrow. So please keep an eye out on that.
And if you get the chance and you're on The Athletic, please check out Michael Walker's unbelievable obituary of Sir Bobby Charlton as well. A very emotional read. Make sure you check that out if you get the chance. Subscribe to The Athletic via theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to pay just £1.99, dollars or euros, depending on where you are, a month for the first 12 months. That's it, chaps. Thank you very much. Unless we've got anything else to add before we close up for the day.
I want to give a shout out to possibly one of our youngest listeners, who is called Noah Fitzpatrick, and he listens to us from Belfast. I'm told that he is a star centre midfielder for Crumlin United FC, and he's only 10 years old. And this made me feel slightly concerned about some of the language that occasionally gets used on the podcast.
Absolutely.
However, so on that sense, I do apologise, Noah, but the response I got was that his parents were like absolute troopers, so we have nothing to worry about.
Let's hope they don't get a visit off social services any day now. The kind of content that we're putting out there. Well, Chris, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Yeah, this is an emotional week for us as well, because this is Jacob's final full week covering Newcastle United on a full-time basis. So going forward, as we've said before, we hope he's going to still be around and still helping us and coming on the podcast. But yeah, this is George's, he's going to stop carrying George's bags after this week.
Yeah, it's emotional for you, Chris, because you're going to have to do some work soon, you fucking lazy twat. Sorry, Noah. Sorry, Noah. Shit. That's it. Bollocks. Ah, damn.
Well, thank you very much, chaps. I think I'm going to go and get my duvet from upstairs, curl up on the couch, make a cup of tea, and maybe watch Back to the Future this afternoon, try and get rid of this awful cold. And with a bit of luck, it'll be all gone by Wednesday night when we go again in the Champions League. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. This has been Pod on the Tyne. Look after yourselves. Have a good week, and we will see you on Thursday. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Look, I've just absolutely dissected Chris apart with a scalpel.
I mean, you didn't.
I absolutely dismembered him.
You didn't. But...
what? I've just I killed him and then I killed him again. I buried him with facts. They didn't kick off. They didn't choose to do it. So it's not. It's his theory.
No,
it's
not.
Irrelevant.
It's not.
The idea that Newcastle haven't, like, this big idea, oh, Newcastle could kick the other way and they could still win matches.
Well, they did kick the other way.
Yeah, and they won a match. It's not like it's the first time they've ever done that. They've been playing since 1892.
Sorry, chaps.
Are you telling me that's the first time they've kicked that way?
No, I didn't say it was the first time. I didn't say it was the first time they've
still going on about it.
No, I know you didn't. I mean, but...
well, then why? What's your point?
Your theory was that they should choose to do it, and they haven't chosen to do it.
No, but that sort of adds to the theory that they're going forward, they should choose to do that.
So your theory is still redundant. No.
Right, come on then. That's enough of that.
No.
Honestly, do I have to grab you both by the ear?
Absolute arsehole.
The Athletic.